Everything under control, Hardy?
Yes, all my apparatus is arranged, Mr. Donegan.
Okay, now, like I told you, this town's a red one.
A red one?
A dark spot. You know, good town for business. Ain't every carry that lets magicians work the midway. But I'm taking a chance of letting you try your now you see it, now you don't see it.
I appreciate that, Mr. Donegan.
I wish you'd use your own powder, though.
Perhaps I can learn to do that in time. But it would greatly facilitate matters.
Huh?
Make things easier.
Oh.
If you would introduce my trick. Here's the list.
Yeah, I guess I'd better look them over before I start stealing in front of them gillies.
The,
Gillies, thistlekin, townsfolk.
Oh.
Number one. Changing a walking stick into thin air and producing a bouquet of flowers. Hey, you sure you can do that?
It's my easiest trick.
Okay. I guess I can give him some powder for that stuff. Oh, just one more thing. If this crowd out there is a cold one, give them Brown's cow, see?
I don't believe I quite...
Give them Brown's cow, you know. Cut the show short.
Very well. I'll leave that to you. You have the running order of the trick. I'll do whatever you announce.
Okay, come on, Professor. Now, right through this flap and out into the back.
Ladies and gentlemen!
Oh, step a little closer to the platform, ladies and gentlemen. That's it. Thank you.
You have just had a sample of what can be seen in its entertaining entirety on the inside of this tent, and all for the total inconsequential admission price of one dima, a tenth of an eighth, a tenth of a dollar. And now I'm going to present our latest headliner, Professor Hardy, the man who mystifies millions in a few of his magical moments. Step right out here, Professor. That's it.
Ready?
Ready.
As you can plainly see, the professor is carrying what to all appearances is an ordinary walking stick. Watch closely and see, if you can, how he makes it disappear into nowhere. Let her go, Professor. Ah, and now from that same nowhere, he will produce a bouquet of flowers. Ah, ladies and gentlemen, that's why you got fooled. You thought it really made that walking stick disappear.
Get off this valley of fake. I'll settle with you later. Scram, go on.
Life would be uninteresting indeed, ladies and gentlemen, if we didn't have a little fun once in a while. But inside the folk, inside the
Today's radio play, Release, is based on a most interesting story taken from the pages of next Sunday's issue of the American Weekly, the magazine distributed with all first Sunday newspapers from coast to coast.
Wait here, young lady. What are you doing on that rail? Come down here.
Oh, why did you have to stop me? I have nothing to live for. I haven't a friend or a friend in the world.
Now, come over here on this bench and pull yourself together. Now. What's the trouble?
Well, I left home to be an actress. Now my money's gone. I'm too proud to go home. I'd rather die than admit I'm a failure.
I know how you feel.
You do? Oh, how could a deckhand on a ferry boat know how an artistic failure feels?
I wasn't always a deckhand, Miss.
No?
Once I, too, had theatrical ambitions.
You wanted to be an actor?
Sort of. I was a magician. Sleight of hand tricks and acts of illusion.
Oh, like Houdini and Thurston, you mean?
Well, anyway, in the same line of work.
Then why are you here?
Well, you see, my greatest drawback was the fact that I couldn't keep up an interesting flow of patter while running through my tricks.
Oh, that was tough.
Finally, in desperation, I got a job with a traveling carnival. That is, I got a tryout. I lasted half a performance.
Oh, what happened?
On my very first appearance, I was so nervous, a piece of magical mechanism, which I had caused to disappear, fell out of my sleeve in front of the audience. I was promptly fired.
They didn't even give you a second chance?
We only get one chance in our business, Miss.
One? I haven't even been given one.
I wish I could help you get your chance. Believe me, if I were in a position to, I would.
I'll bet you would. Say, how long would it take you to brush up on your tricks?
Spend all my spare time practicing for the show I'll never give. What do you ask?
You said you'd give me my chance to get on the stage if you could. Well, you can.
How can I? I'm known in every agent's office as Hopeless John Hardy.
Oh, no. Listen, I've got an idea. You couldn't make the grade because you couldn't chatter and do the tricks. All right. You stick to the tricks and I'll do the chatter.
Well,
Jarvis Bay, through me, thanks you for your appreciation of his magic art. And now Rama Day wishes you to watch closely while he causes this cage containing a live canary, which I hold up here, to disappear on the count of three. I ask you to listen to the song of the bird, proving that a live canary is you. And now, on the count of three, the great fakir, Ramad Bey, will cause both bird and cage to disappear. One, two, three.
They're eating it up, John.
It's you they're eating up, Kay, my dear.
Oh, flatterous.
Ramad Bey, through me, thanks you for your appreciation of his magic art. Ramad Bey now wishes me to introduce his dangerous and death-defying act of magic, the plate of death. In this plate, I show you bullets which fit the revolver held by the young man at my right. Show them your gun, Paul. Ramad Bey, the great fakir of all India, with nothing but this china plate between himself and death, will catch the bullets as they are fired at him. Ready, Paul?
Ready.
Ramad Bey, the great fakir bows his assent. Ladies and gentlemen, the plate of death. Ramad Bey, thank you for your appreciation of his magic art.
And that, my children, ends our 78th week of solid booking.
Congratulations, John.
Oh, you certainly have what the customers like, John.
Yes, and that's you. A pretty girl can do more for an act than the greatest ability. That's been proved.
How has it?
By what you've done for the former John Hardy.
Oh.
Kay, I'm not any better today than I was that unfortunate day with the carnival.
Why, what do you mean?
Your idea of covering my identity with this Indian robe and beard. Well, you can see for yourself what it's done for me.
Yeah, and for me, too.
I think I'll run along and pack the apparatus and props.
See you at the train, folks.
Fine, Paul. You sure we have enough blanks for the plate trick?
I will.
Say, John, wouldn't you think somebody gets wise to the fact that real bullets would crack that plate if Paul ever fired them at you?
That's the first thing a magician learns, Kay, and so should his assistant.
What?
Never give your audience time to think. We have to race from one trick into the next. That's the secret of our success.
I apologize to the audience. 78 weeks as a magician's assistant, and I just learned the magician's first secret.
Would you like to hear his second?
Of course.
Step into my dressing room. I just wait until I get this darn mattress off my face. Ah, there. I wonder if a real gear is as hot as this.
Why don't you take a layoff and find out?
When I take a layoff, it'll be for a more important reason than raising a beard.
And now, what is the second secret of the great fakir?
Well, perhaps it's not a secret. Perhaps you know this already. I love you, Paul.
John,
won't you see that all these weeks? Every day, every hour we've been together has built a flame of love in my heart for you.
You've been terribly sweet and kind to me, John.
We met when each had lost hope, and together we climbed out of the veil of despair into new heights of happiness, haven't we?
Yes, John. You know what you saved me from.
I'm doubly glad I stopped you from jumping off the ferry boat rail that night, Kay.
You are?
Then I was glad I'd saved a human life. And now I'm glad I saved the life of the only one in the world who means anything to me.
John,
there isn't anything I wouldn't do for you, Kay.
I believe that, John.
At first I started out with this fakir act as a way to get back into the business.
Yes, sir.
But it's come to mean a great deal more than that. I can never go any farther than I have. But you can.
I?
Yes. And after we complete our contract, you're quitting, Holder.
Oh, no.
Yes, yes. You're going into the legit.
Oh, no, no, John. I belong here in the act with you.
Now, don't argue, my dear. Now you can get your chance from the producers who wouldn't give it to you before.
But you, John, what of you?
Well, I'll be there to spur you on, I hope.
Why do you say you hope?
I'll be there if you say the word.
Why, of course, I shall want you there to spur me on.
Then you'll marry me, Kay?
John. Dear John,
I know my proposal is a surprise to you and perhaps a shock. But I'm not as old as I look, my dear.
Oh, John,
I'm only in the early 40s. I love you. I'll be good to you. Why, there isn't anything I wouldn't do for you.
There isn't anything I wouldn't do for you, John.
You'll marry me, Kay.
Yes.
At the opening performance in the next town, Paul stops Kay as she is on her way to the stage.
Hey.
Oh, Paul, I couldn't see you against the light.
Did you tell him?
No. No, I didn't, Paul.
But you were going to after we closed last week. Then you were going to tell him on the train. Why didn't you?
I can't explain here. Not now, darling. Can't you wait until after the performance?
I can't wait any longer, Kay. I must know why you didn't tell him we love each other and we're planning to be married.
Paul. There's someone over there in the property room. I'll hear you.
What if they do? We love each other. There's nothing to be ashamed of. Hey, you do love me, don't you?
You know I do, Paul. With all my heart. But I'm not going to marry you.
But why? Why do you...
John loves me, too. He wants me to marry him.
But he's too old for you. You're not going to marry him.
Yes, Paul. I've promised I'll marry him.
Why? In heaven's name, why?
Oh, you know everything I have. Everything I am or hope to be, I owe to him. You know that.
Oh, yes, yes. I know you're obligated to him for what he's done, Kay. But that doesn't mean you've got to throw away your life, your happiness, our happiness.
Let's not talk about it anymore now, dear. We go on in a minute.
Oh, all right.
Paul.
What's the matter?
Dr. John in the property room. He just stepped under the light.
Well?
I suppose he's heard it.
I hope so. I'm not afraid to face him.
I hope he didn't. Because no matter what you say, I shall keep my promise to John.
Robert Day, Rumi, wishes to thank you for your appreciation of his magic art. And now, Robert Day wishes me to introduce his dangerous and justifying act of magic, the plate of death. In this plate, I show you bullets which fit the revolver held by the young man at my right. Show him your gun, Paul.
What's happened to John? He seems to be gazing in his face.
I don't know. Not out of it, Paul.
Ramad Bey, the greatest fakir of all India, with nothing but this china plate between himself and death, will catch the bullets as they are fired at him. Ready, Paul?
Ready.
Ramad Bey?
John. John, don't look like that.
The great fakir bows his assent. Ladies and gentlemen, the place of death.
Paul, you stab him. John. John.
It's no use, Kay. He's dead.
Oh, you killed him. Oh, Paul, you killed him.
No, no, Kay, I didn't. Look, the plate's unbroken. He pulled it down as I fired. He loaded the gun himself just before we went on the stage manager saw him do it.
Why did he do it himself?
He said this was the one time he didn't trust me to do a good job. And I never suspected, never thought through his trick.
That's the first secret of a magician. Never give the audience time to think. Oh, poor John. Poor John. You learned that too well.
Why? Why, if he loved you so much, why is this?
Greater love hath no man. Oh, Paul, don't you think? He must have heard us. This was his way of releasing us from my promise.
Be sure to read the interesting story of famous magicians which will appear in next Sunday's issue of the American Weekly, the magazine distributed with all Hearst Sunday newspapers from coast to coast. It will be found under the title Secrets of the Magician. This is Wentworth announcing and turning the microphone over to your own announcer. Thank you.